Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour on this Tuesday, the 27th day of December 2011. I'm Jeff Seifert for Raven News. It's hard to think of Herb Diedrichsen as anything but fast. Decades since he left the basketball court and the track, this respected Tlingit elder still elicits knowing smiles from those who saw him play and those who continue to hear the stories of how the young Diedrichsen crossed cultural barriers through sports. In 2010, Diedrichsen participated in a study of Sitka's distinctiveness. This last summer, reporter Diana Saverin visited Sitka on a fellowship from Yale to meet some of the people who contributed to that report. In part three of her five-part series, Saverin finds in Herb Diedrichsen a modern man who says he owes a great deal to his cultural roots and to his education at Sheldon Jackson School.
That used to be our post office there, up to Castle Hill.
Herb Diedrichsen grew up in Sitka Village and went to Sheldon Jackson when it was still a training school for Alaska Natives in the 40s. He's seen the town undergo all sorts of changes in his lifetime, from the physical landscape to its role in global shifts between war and peace to race relations. He hasn't stood on the sidelines, though. In fact, he's never been one to stand on the sideline.
I became the mailman, and I used to run town all the time. We didn't realize what was happening. We were training for track.
Herb ran for Sheldon Jackson School. He ran fast.
At that time, I was a pretty good athlete. Track, I was a good track man. One time, I did 10 flat on 100.
It was Herb's speed on the basketball court that most affected his life. Lots of people recognized his talent. It got him quite a reputation in Sitka Village. Tlingit elders watching him play in high school gave him a new name, Chief Sea Hands, because his hands seemed to see the ball. Herb played basketball in the early days of the gold medal tournament. He played with the Navy, too. Sports allowed him to form a connection with athletes in Sitka and elsewhere who came from different backgrounds. What was missing, though, was a connection back to the stories he heard growing up about Tlingit culture.
We missed out on that part of life, you know. You've got to be a warrior. If you're going to be a warrior, you have to follow these rules. These guys are toughened up, you know. I was told those stories. We kind of wanted to go and see what it would be like to have to go through that, you know. We went up Indian River and found a deep hole there. And we built a fire on one side of the river. And we walked across to jump into the water, the other side. And there's three of us. We were going to all go in together. So on a one, two, three, we'd go. And one guy's going to bug off, and I grabbed him and pulled him in with me. When your head hits that cold water, just like a little melon, you know, and of course you're jumping up and down. We had made a whip out of alder branches. He had the whip, and he hit me with it. And of course, left big welts there and drew a little blood. I immediately grabbed the whip, and I hit him, and I saw what happened to him, and then we stopped right there, you know. And I said, whoa. I said, I'm glad we didn't have to go through that training, you know. That
Herb would want to discover his limits is a testament to his character. By contemporary standards, his work life was backbreaking. He worked in a sawmill, fish house, and was the straw boss in a cannery. He also crewed Andrew Hope Saner for 12 years. Promotion in those days meant not setting the heavy seine net by hand.
I was what they call a skiff man. And then we had the first power skiff in Sitka. To Hope built that. In 2 weekends we did that.
So before then, would you row the seine?
Yeah, skiff? Well, yeah. We had to use the oars, you know. I wasn't, you know, at that early age, I wasn't that strong, but, I can hold those oars out.
How old were you?
15, yeah.
Nowadays, Herb and his wife Polly, who have been married for 59 years, stick together. Sometimes traveling around the world, sometimes driving around the town they've both seen evolve through the years.
We don't want to lose you, you know.
In Sitka, I'm Diana Saverin.
Reporter Diana Saverin is a Kingsley Trust Fellow at Yale University who visited Sitka this summer to meet people who contributed to a study on the community's distinctiveness. The paper, called Up for Discussion, What Makes a Sustainable Community, was published by the Island Institute with grant support from the Alaska Humanities Council. In part four of this series, Saverin meets fisheries advocate and troller Linda Benkin. The State Department of Fish and Game announced on Thursday that it plans to proceed with another sacro herring fishery in West Beam Canal this spring. As Deanna Garrison reports, this would be the second commercial sacro herring fishery in West Beam in 36 years.
Fish and Game estimates 7,915 tons of herring will return to the West Beam Canal area this spring. Of that, seiners will be allowed to harvest a total of 758 tons. Fish and Game Commercial Fisheries Management Biologist Scott Walker.
There's still a lot of questions about how strong the market will be and that sort of thing, but that's where we are right now. Our plan is to have a fishery. Our plan is to allow the purse seine fishermen to harvest that.
The fishery alternates between purse seiners and gill netters. The guideline harvest level for West Beam this past spring was significantly higher at 1,276 tons. A total of four gill netters actually participated in the 2011 fishery. It was the first time the fishery was held in West Beam in 35 years.
It wasn't very successful last year. Last year it was the gill net fleet's turn. They were given the first ability to fish by regulation. We did harvest a small amount, but the majority of the fish spawned in closed waters. There is a pretty large closed area that last year encompassed the majority of the spawn. So we did see 17.9 miles of spawn, which is a lot of spawn. It wasn't, real dense, but we had some pretty good spawning areas. And so this year, after the gill netters fishing last year, that brings the purse seine fleet into their year. And so here we are.
With an even lower GHL this year, Walker isn't sure what kind of participation to expect from the seine fleet.
The way that it's divided up right now, regulations require us to divide it up into an equal share quota, and that leaves 15.8 tons per permit, which isn't very much fish for an individual vessel at the prices and the market the way it is right now. So, we are going to have the fishery. We have a quota. It's all set out. We have this equal share that's set out, and we're kind of trying to decide how we're going to actually have this fishery. We don't know how the market is going to work. Sitka has a very large quota this year, and so it leaves it up in the air exactly how viable this fishery will be.
There are a total of 48 Southeast Sacro seine permits eligible to fish West Beam Canal.
Last year's herring fishery was a complete flop.
That's Andy Rawolf, a vocal opponent of the West Beam herring fishery, a member of the Ketchikan Herring Action Group. He says commercial fishermen should not be targeting herring in that area.
The reason we're opposed to it is that there's several hundred lodge owners, bed and breakfast, charter boaters, salmon fishermen, commercial and sport fishermen that depend on the salmon and the halibut and everything else that feed on those herring throughout each year. I mean, we're talking about millions of dollars of revenue in this area that depend on a healthy ecosystem in West Beam Canal, and they're targeting the bottom of the food chain, and everything else in that food chain depends on those herring. Salmon are 60-some percent of their diet is herring, and halibut is 60-some percent of their diet is herring, and salmon and halibut have been getting steadily smaller for the last 10 years, or halibut have been getting steadily smaller for the last 20-some years. The halibut today weighs half of what it weighed 20 years ago, and obviously that's something to do with the food chain.
Rawolf says he'd like to see the fishery managed more conservatively to allow the herring stocks in West Beam to further rebound. Ron Porter is the fleet manager for EC Phillips. He says Fish and Game has protected the stocks and is managing the fishery responsibly.
The fishery has a 6,000-ton threshold, which the department's met, went over this thing time and time again with good scientific data. And as long as the stock has 6,000 tons in it, they feel that that's ample for spawning and to keep the stock moving ahead. And obviously that's what's going on. It fluctuates here, yes, and it has, but the last few years it's been rebounding pretty well.
Porter says he expects the 2012 sacro herring fishery will be more successful than last year's.
I expect probably not a lot more participation, but a lot more catching ability, because the purse seines catch the herring more rapidly than the gillnets do.
Herring abundance is estimated in part using aerial surveys designed to map spawning locations and record the length of shoreline with spawn. That's followed by dive surveys, which estimate the density of eggs and the average width of the spawn. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
In other news, prosecutors say a 14-year-old girl is fighting for her life after being injected with heroin. The girl was in critical condition at an Anchorage hospital on Sunday. 26-year-old Sean Warner remained jailed, and a judge set bail at $90,000 after prosecutors said he used a belt as a tourniquet and shot heroin into the girl's arm. The victim, who has been identified only as J.D., was found the next morning face down in her own vomit and struggling to breathe. Warner's father and friend disputed the prosecutor's story and said he's a Navy veteran who saved lives as a medic in Afghanistan. They said Warner had struggled since returning from the war, and they were working with him to get his life together. And managers of the Tanana River Bridge Project are planning a wood giveaway for Fairbanks area residents as a way of thanking people for putting up with the upcoming construction. The $190 million bridge to span along a secluded stretch of the river in Salcha is slated for completion in 2014. It's part of a proposed $800 million eastward rail expansion to Delta Junction. Project managers plan to give away about 300 cords of split stove-length wood in early May. The planned 3,300-foot bridge will accommodate both vehicles and trains. It will be the longest in the state and will connect the interior's highway system to military training grounds to the south. That's it for Raven News for this hour. You can find these stories and more on our website at kcaw.org.